Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to look at a lot of issues today, always starting with the latest on health and nutrition. And this is from the University of Tobuka in Japan. It's about slowing down. Is aging caused by decreased cellular metabolism? Interesting story published in Scientific Reports, and I'll share it with you, along with about 10 other studies. Also today, we'll be doing a commentary from constitutional lawyer John Whitehead on impeach the government. Rogue agencies have been abusing their powers for decades. And also today, I'm going to share this corporate news repeats CIA propaganda on Bolivian coup, Jimmy Dore. I won't play all of it, but I'll play enough of it so you get the message that the messages we're getting about the coup are wrong. We're being spoon-fed misinformation. Why? And he'll explain that. And so if you're one of those people who think Epstein didn't kill himself, well, we have a person who's going to prove to you that he absolutely positively did kill himself. Really? This will be interesting. Also, when I'm going to share a letter to Wikipedia's board. And by the way, we have been told as of today, we're not allowed to share any more information with Jimmy Wells or any member of his board or officers of the Wikimedia Foundation that controls Wikipedia. Evidently, we just have to share it with their legal team. That's fine. There are many other ways of getting that message out. So we're touching some raw nerves there. Well, then they should be not surprised at more information coming at them. On Wikipedia, there was an effort to remove my bio on several occasions by editors who didn't believe it should have been there. Ah, we didn't know this. We got behind their firewall, and now we have a list of all the names and the rationales for people wanting to keep us there. So we've written a very philosophical editorial about that. And one of the claims against me has been for decades that I'm an age denialist. That's odd. I thought I was the only person in America that actually cured AIDS. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Robert Gallo. Maybe the $800 billion pumped into the AIDS machine through foundations, government grants, and Burroughs Wellcome, maybe they've got some cures on their side. No, they don't. They have a lot of dead bodies, though. So today I'm going to read you a letter and direct you to a website that is there for you to examine, none of which did I create. It was all done by an outside investigation of looking at what I did at two different scientific institutions, the Tri-State Healing Center, where we treated thousands and thousands of patients with our whole medical staff, and the Institute of Applied Biology. Well, one of those people just happens to have sent a letter, and I'm going to read that to you today. So, but that doesn't matter. The proof, evidence does not inspire any motivation to change any inaccuracies, slanders, and libels on Wikipedia when it comes to those that they don't like. But you'll know the truth, and you'll have the truth. We begin with the latest on health and healing. And as you all know, we're wrapping down less than a week to go in our anti-aging clinical study on campus. And then we'll get the blood work done in about 5 days, and then I'll give you the results. But this is throughout history. Humans have been obsessed with finding a way to prevent aging and prolong life, and why not? Although the mechanisms, according to the university, have long eluded us, modern science is revealing more and more about the aging process. The trouble is, I believe they've studied it as if it's a disease, because we inaccurately assume that dementia and Alzheimer's, weight gain, memory loss, weakness and loss of muscles, crepey skin, sagging, bagging, jowliness, fatigue, that those are normal to the aging process. But they're not. They're normal to the disease process. And that's the big difference. So they've been looking in the wrong direction. But researchers from Japan have uncovered new information about the genetic processes that may trigger age-related disorders, including low energy production and low cellular growth. This was all published in the peer-reviewed Journal of Scientific Reports, and they examined the potential mechanisms by which disruption of the gene serine, what is called SHMT2, affects cellular processes such as mitochondrial respiration. And so what they've come up with, in short, is that the mitochondria, which are your energy factors, as they age and die and are not replaced, you simply have less energy. Okay, that's not new or original. We've known that for a long time. We also know that the epigenetics, F-I-A-P-I, genetic, G-E-N-E-T-I-C, processes impact cellular activity, meaning anything that's happened in your life, any trauma, negativity, any abuse mentally or physically, will then process itself through your DNA. Hence, it becomes the epigenetic. So even if you may be an adult now, you've forgotten, more often than not, what happened as an early child. That was because you couldn't intellectualize at an early age, but you certainly emotionalized. Everything became an emotion, positive or negative. So that also must be included in dealing with your epigenetic self. And that's why, for example, 50% of everything being done in the current study required epigenetic understanding, and that's where half the study was. Walking and eating and detoxifying and rejuvenating and juicing and cleansing and proper supplementation, all that was important. That's half the process. The other half of life is about, what is our value? What do we value? What gives us joy and happiness? What can we harmonize in a positive way with? And frequently, we're prevented from doing that because of the blocking mechanisms at the DNA level that interfere in that process. Almost all that's subconscious. So that's why when you hear the people next week on the show, I'm going to set aside an hour of my show because this, I believe, is historic, and let them tell their stories. I'm not going to tell them what to say. I'm just going to say, tell about your experience. What is different today than it was when you began the study? Now, they won't know their blood results, but that will come later. But at least everything else has changed will. What do you want to bet that an awful lot of what they're going to talk about is how they changed their perception of what they could and could not do? And that created a whole new reality. And that disconnected the old epigenetic limitations and gave a whole new genetic expression. So you can rejuvenate the cell. You can rejuvenate the mitochondria. PQQ rejuvenates it. NAD also helps repair. So there's a lot of things that can help us, in effect, become younger to a substantial degree if we pay full attention. It's just not episodic. You can't just do one thing. You can't just smoke a cigarette and then take some vitamin C. You can't go out and eat a hamburger and then take a bit more fiber and suddenly everything is equal. It is not. And what we do negative always exceeds what we do positive because we've been conditioned to believe that we can't overdo it. Shouldn't. I mean, don't get crazy about your health. I mean, don't become too healthy. Don't become too concerned about your diet. My God, that's a mental illness. In fact, they've actually labeled being excessively concerned about your health as a mental illness now. It's in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Psychiatry, number 5. But when it comes to being sick and making bad choices, like being a Democrat or a Republican, and other stupid notions, and by eating all you want and eating junk food and drinking all the colas and sugar, that they have no problem with. Do what you want, moderation. What's moderation? It's a meaningless term. I know people who are 300 pounds who said, I thought I was moderate. Yeah. And, of course, our impressions then become our reality. So we never encourage people to compensate in a higher degree of activity being healthy and happy than we do in maladapting to being normal and sick and unhappy and frustrated, and then spend our lives being manipulated by people trying to take advantage of our incompleteness. Something to think about. From the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine comes a study about legumes. Now, those could be split peas or pulses or all your bean family. And there's hundreds of beans. In fact, in India, you could find over 500 different legumes alone. The average American probably consumes one, like split pea soup or yellow lentil adal soup. But there's a lot of variety, and they're very healthy for you. In fact, consuming more beans, lentils, and peas and other legumes reduce the risk of cardiovascular disease and coronary heart disease and high blood pressure. That's in the latest edition of Advances in Nutrition, a peer-reviewed journal. And here they looked at different prospective cohort studies, and they assessed the consumption of legumes on the risk of cardiometabolic disease and related markers, like C-reactive protein, homocysteine. It's very simple. Eat a healthy plant-based diet with lots of beans and legumes, and you're going to have less likelihood of having heart disease, hypertension, or diabetes. And that's a big deal. From the German Center for Neurodegenerative Diseases comes a new study published in Nature, the most respected magazine in the world in science. And it says inflammatory processes drive progression of Alzheimer's and other brain diseases. Wow. That is so revolutionary and so new. Who knew that inflammation caused brain disease? How about everyone in this audience? Isn't it amazing? Here's the most respected scientific magazine in the world telling us something that everyone in this audience who's been listening for the last 45 years already knew. That anything that creates inflammation is going to create inflammation in the brain because the blood circulates everywhere, including the brain. And you got an inflammatory cytokine or tumor necrosis factor alpha or prostaglandin that's pro-inflammatory, you're going to put inflammation in the brain. And that leads to the amyloid plaques. And that leads to cellular destruction of the synapses and dendrite breaking. So, let's see. November 21st, 2019, Nature acknowledges what everyone else knew all along. So you've been ahead of the curve on this. From the University of Louisville comes a study about garlic. Is that the key to improving cognitive health in older people? Older meaning over the age of 27. And the answer is yes. How so? Well, simple. It's called allyl sulfide, S-U-L-F-I-D-E, and it's known to be very plentiful in garlic, but it's also in Brussels sprouts and asparagus, cauliflower, watercress, kale, radishes, mustard. And it is directly related in preventing age-related memory loss in people with Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. In particular, the compound, like garlic, helps counteract age-related changes in gut bacteria. And the gut contains trillions of microorganisms collectively called the gut microbiota. So when you're talking about bacteria or microbiota or the gut bacteria, it's all the same. Now, these microorganisms are known to play an important role in maintaining human health. However, there's not much known about the health effects associated with changes in gut microbiota that come with age. As a person gets older, the diversity of the gut microbiota declines because people's diets stay the same and the foods they eat stay the same. They should be always looking to do something that's, you know, new and exciting in the way of their culinary delights, even multicultural dishes. You know, try Spanish dishes, but not just any dish from any culture. Look at the healthiest dishes from every culture. And you've got healthy dishes in almost every culture. The exception is Scotland, Ireland, and England. God, they have a terrible diet. My family's from Ireland. My mother's side goes way back hundreds of years. In fact, I'm going to be doing one of my pet projects. I haven't done a pet project. I keep writing them down. I want to do a pet project. I'm doing other projects that I feel are more important. But this is a project I've wanted to do for a long time, the truth behind the Irish famine. And it wasn't because there were just potato blights and that decimated the the potatoes from the average Irish family. It's not true. Over 20,000 ships loaded with food of all types went from Ireland to Great Britain during this period of time. 2 million people lost their lives. So I'm going to go over there in the spring. I'll probably spend about 3 weeks there filming. I'll have it, all the different places arranged and the experts I'm going to film. And anyone in the audience who would like to be a part of that, send in an email, no phone calls, because I'm finishing three films right now. By the way, we're in color correction and sound correction. The film itself on the environment is done, and we're just getting the final polishing done, and then we'll set aside time for premiere. But also I'm finishing up two other films, Brother, Can You Spare a Dime, about the new poverty. And I'm focusing there on what it's like to be a person that had a good income, had everything, and now has nothing, or is really in a different position. That's 70% of the American population. And how do we get the rich to become super rich? $27 trillion, that tiny little fraction is gained, where the average American has lost a total of $800 billion, the rest of the poor parts of society. And then I've got another film, Manufacturing Madness, almost finished, about the abuses, which is almost entirely the whole field of psychiatry and mental health. So in any case, when I finish those, which will be over the next 4 months, then I'll go on a trip. And those who would like to see how documentaries are made and learn a lesson in history, especially history of a genocide, because it was genocide, because it was systematic and it was known what the impact would be. That's going to be one of my pet projects. Then I'm going down to Louisiana, and I'm going to film what happened in, I don't want to give it away, but there, after the Civil War, thousands of people went into a camp that was supposed to be a relocation camp, and it wasn't. It was a death camp. Thousands of people were killed. Over 20,000 people died in that camp after the Civil War. So I'm going to do something on that as well. Anyhow, when we talk about health and the gut health, just remember everything you put in there is going to either contribute to positive bacteria or contribute to negative bacteria. Sugar, alcohol in any amount starts a proliferation of bad bacteria, and it just goes wild. And that's how people end up with candida and other conditions. And from Barcelona, which is a beautiful city, the Institute of Global Health, published in The Lancet Planetary Health, showed that urban green space can prevent premature deaths. Yeah. Residential greenness can protect against premature all-cause mortality. And why? Well, there were several longitudinal studies, and they talked about being in green environments, in parks around trees and grass and ponds and water, and that relaxes you, de-stresses you, and allows you to feel more at peace. And we just don't have enough of that in the cities. Well, what can you do? You can start to make some of the buildings more green. You can add more parks. You can add community parks. There's a lot you can do. We just have to value green spaces and stopping premature death from cardiovascular disease and metabolic syndrome and improving a person's mental health by de-stressing them more so than just another building for another group of developers and bankers to make money from. By the way, this is a big deal in Spain, Italy, Austria, Switzerland, China, and in Canada, not so much in the United States. But we need it here as well. And finally, from the National University of Singapore and Duke University Medical School comes a new study showing that a plant-based diet can prevent cognitive decline. That's important. And again, we've been suggesting that for some time. This was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. So go on a plant-based diet, a healthy plant-based diet, and lower your blood pressure, produce anti-cancer nutrients going through your body, have higher fiber, less caloric overload. It's all good. That's the latest on health and healing. And I'm Gary Noll. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, and by the way, tomorrow I want to talk about black cumin seed oil reversing liver disease, a really good study on that, but we don't have time for that today. But when we come back, we're going to go to this person who thinks that he can prove to you that Jeffrey Epstein killed himself, and anyone who challenged that is just wrong.
Unsealed court documents, broken bones in his neck. Prison guards would want to check who would have been his address. A thousand names in the address board still stands.
Think Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself? Well, you're wrong. He killed himself, people, and that's a fact. It's what we're told to believe, so you should believe it. New York State officials ruled his death a suicide by hanging. Now, I'll prove to you why we can definitely trust them, but first consider this. There's a strong precedence in history of powerful people killing themselves when even more powerful people have their agendas threatened, like when JFK killed himself. And then Lee Harvey Oswald, who didn't kill JFK, killed himself. And Martin Luther King killed himself. And here's a sketch of when President Lincoln committed suicide. Did powerful people who stood to lose all their money, status, and power, as well as be locked in prison for the rest of their lives, want Epstein dead? Absolutely not. On the contrary, Epstein was their only hope to relieve their guilty consciences. Every single one of these nearly 1,000 powerful people would have been terribly disappointed to find out Epstein killed himself. I'd imagine they sent their sincerest condolences to his family. Even if they wanted him dead, which wouldn't make any sense, he was in prison. There's no way they could have gotten to him to kill him. Epstein was in prison surrounded by murderers. It's not like they could just pay a murderer to murder someone, because I don't think murderers would do something like that. What some people think is odd is that court documents were unsealed that gave details about some of his crimes involving having underage girls provide sex to former New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson, U.S. Senator George Mitchell, and Prince Andrew. And then the very next day, Epstein killed himself. 100% by himself. Dead. At the time of his death, there was an ongoing investigation to make thousands of other pages of documents public involving an address book that allegedly involved over 1,000 other names of people involved in his pedophile ring. Epstein just so happened to conveniently choose to kill himself while all this was going on? Now, admittedly, it looks a little fishy with all the motive that 1,000 powerful people would have, but there's a perfectly good explanation for all of this. Mercury was in retrograde. Let's move on. One of the people that definitely wouldn't be named in the still sealed address book is Bill Clinton, who flew on Epstein's jet 26 times with him. I suspect old BC had to go to grief counseling when he found out Epstein took his own life. Willie Clinton has said he knows nothing of the terrible crimes Epstein was involved with. I believe him. I also believe him when he says,
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
And when Clinton admitted he lied,
indeed, I did have a relationship with Miss Lewinsky that was not appropriate.
I didn't believe him. I still don't. I think the only time he lied is when he admitted to lying. He was clearly self-sacrificing in the most altruistic way possible to better serve the American people by lying about lying. And given that he has a precedence for lying, I think it's a pretty safe bet that that's the only time he lied. And I think we all know Clinton was a president with very little interest in sex, so it doesn't add up that he'd have any association with Epstein or anything to gain with his death. So for the record, the Clinton body count remains at 50, not 51. To the conspirators, why would the prison staff allow murder? They definitely wouldn't. Consider the fact that the whole prison system is run in a for-profit way that exploits incarceration rather than providing rehabilitation in order to improve their bottom line, and therefore the whole prison system is kind of criminal human trafficking in and of itself. So I'm sure the fine folks that run the corrupt prison system wouldn't be open to corruption in the form of enormous payoffs by some of the most powerful people in the world in order to eliminate the one man, Epstein, who could strip them of all their power and freedom if he snitched because of In God We Trust, the Pledge of Allegiance, and other things that give us blind faith and authority outside of ourselves. Back to the trustworthy New York officials that ruled Epstein's death suicide by hanging. Now, what makes their job complex is Epstein was supposed to be checked on by guards every 30 minutes. But this wasn't happening for some reason. Probably because the prison guards are so spiritually advanced that they don't believe in time. And there were two security cameras outside of Epstein's cell. But oddly enough, both cameras were somehow broken. What are the odds? But remember, Mercury was in retrograde, so apparently the odds were 100%. And that, of course, explains the irregularities. So if the guards were doing their job and the cameras weren't broken, then the New York Examiner would have eyewitness proof and video evidence that Epstein definitely killed himself, and there would be no controversy. But to make matters worse, Epstein's brother hired a second examiner to do another autopsy, and they found broken bones in his neck that are much more consistent with someone being strangled to death rather than hanging themselves. What? It's very inconvenient that his brother would do this. First, there is no need to get a second opinion in a very suspicious, high-profile death of someone who could ruin the lives and reputation of 1,000 of the world's most powerful people, some of which have probably given money to New York State officials. Second, you can trust New York State officials when they say it's a suicide by hanging, because there's no reason why you can't trust them. You know what it is? Epstein's brother is conspiring to make his death look like a murder instead of a suicide, because he doesn't want a suicide to bring shame to the family. Because killing himself's obviously the most shameful thing Epstein's ever done, and his brother doesn't want people to know about it so it doesn't ruin the great reputation that the family name has. And that proves we can trust the New York medical examiners when they say Epstein killed himself. Epstein case is closed. Go back to sleep.
I'd like to spend a few moments now reading a letter. This is from the Division of Cancer Research Institute of Biology. And it's from a person I met long ago, back in 1972. She had been at the Institute for a couple years, and then she was doing cancer research before that in Bulgaria. The director had come from the Institut Pasteur, and it was mainly doing cancer research, pain research, and alternatives to methadone. I was the strange bird upstairs on the third floor, doing the nutrition and anti-aging health research. Now, why this letter is important is because one of the ways that that Wikipedia and its editors wanted to destroy my reputation was by saying I was an AIDS denialist. And yet, by any measure of objectivity, they could have gone to PRN.fm and watched the documentary. It's up there now. And you'll see in that documentary, you'll see people such as Tony Brown of PBS and Earl Caldwell and Bill Tatum and Doug Henderson and McCreary from Channel 5. These were all highly respected. Many were Emmy Award-winning and multiple award-winning journalists. They were all in the African-American community. That was what was ironic. And they took months of research including coming over to the Tri-State Healing Center at 72nd and Broadway, where I was for years, and where of the thousands and thousands of patients who were treated, there were 1,200 people over a period of about 15 years who were treated for HIV and AIDS defining illnesses, none were charged. They were given that treatment for free, and it was all my protocols. I would go in each evening, generally around 6 o'clock, when the people with AIDS like to come because they like to support themselves and one another. And it was very common to see Isaac Hayes and Stokely Carmichael and people within the African-American community who would come there to give support to members of the African-American community who were suffering from AIDS-defining illnesses. There's a lot of emotional support. But also there were all-natural, non-toxic therapies. I had to create therapies to get rid of their parasites, get rid of their infections, to help their local focal infections, like in the colon and intestines, stomach, and then go after the viruses in their body, not just HIV, but also Epstein-Barr, cytomegalovirus, herpes, 1, 2, and 6, hepatitis B and C, etc. We had so much success that Senator Patterson, who would become Governor Patterson, again an African-American, suggested that we needed to let the world know what we were doing in that little office town on 72nd Street. So we put together a press conference. It took a whole year. And from around the United States, we invited any patients and their physicians with medical records showing the details of going from full HIV infection and AIDS to finding illnesses to health. Now, not all were going to seroconvert, but I had 8 that had seroconverted, and we had the absolute proof. We had all their blood chemistries done at La Roche Labs, etc. Well, also, during that period of time, people would come and say, well, we're from Tony Brown's Journal, and we heard that you're doing good work with AIDS. And I said, well, talk with the patients. I'd introduce them to the patients, and then I would say, with the patient's permission, go in and, you know, look at their records. And they did. And they'd come back and back and back, and they'd take copies of the blood results, the viral loads, to outside specialists and pathologists and virologists. And finally, they would come back and say, there's enough proof here that you've actually done what no one else on the planet has done. You've reversed AIDS and HIV infection in people, and a number of people using different protocols come on the air. Because Tony Brown and all these others were not about to risk their reputation on quackery or pseudoscience. These were real people with real diseases, and it was all scientifically, objectively proven that they were reversed in their disease because of this protocol. So imagine my surprise when instead of anyone saying, hey, we'd like to know what you're doing, we're going to come to this press conference, not a single person within the gay community, the AIDS community, or the major media showed up. Now, there were 7,000 invitations sent out on 3 separate occasions. Now, we filmed it, and segments of that filming and the people getting up and talking and their doctor and the scientists at the panel are there in that documentary. But so, too, are the clips from Tony Brown's Journal and Bill McCurry. These are real people showing you that I helped them reverse their disease. No one else on the planet's history has done that. And they were healthy without any toxic drugs whatsoever. Instead of saying, this is interesting, instead they, oh, you must be an AIDS denialist. That was a campaign that was started because at the same time as I was reversing AIDS and improving people's health, I was also writing a series of columns about profiting upon people suffering with HIV infection and AIDS, the profiteers. And they didn't like that. So that was their revenge. And that's what stuck on Wikipedia. And we've showed them that it's wrong. We've showed them the proof it's wrong, and they don't care. So that's where we've lived with this. You know, the people want to know the truth can find it, and the people want to believe the lies will believe the lies. So I was surprised when I was told that this letter arrived. And this is this person who's just a wonderful person. She was very quiet, and she was a brilliant person. I mean, right up there at genius level. And she was a workaholic. I don't care what time you went in the institute, 7 days a week, she was there. And I said, don't you have a social life? Don't you have friends? And, you know, you're spending too much time here. No, no, no. She'd say, there's time in my life to do the things I want to do. But right now it's saving lives. And then she sent this just recently. Said, dear Gary, I apologize for taking so long to send you this overdue letter of acknowledgement. As you know, I've been a research scientist at the Institute of Applied Biology since 1970, but had also been conducting cancer research 5 years before then. I will never forget when you first started working at the Institute. You were an idealist, and in many respects, a naive young man. You were interested in aging. Among the many divisions at the Institute, no one was interested in natural health, diet, and aging. Dr. Lawrence Lachan was impressed with your holistic view of health and secured your position. If you remember, I was only one of two full staff members who would come up to the third floor where you were always engaged in original and applied research. Over the years, I observed well over 100 original experiments you conducted. What captured the attention of the director and senior scientists was that you were able to extend the lifespan of rats by nearly 30% with intermittent fasting and what you called a living foods diet. We were also impressed by food and juice matrix that you created for preventing and treating disease. I recall the woman suffering from terminal pancreatic cancer at the hospital across the street from the Institute. She was in hospice care, and you requested to have an opportunity to help her. The hospital's leading oncologist was adamantly against the idea, but the Institute's director won out, and you were permitted to work with the patient. 3 months later, based upon your protocol, she was cancer-free and returned to normal life. That was when the director requested I work with you more because your ideas were completely revolutionary. That was around the same time when you were inundated, or we were inundated, with AIDS cases, and we were largely unsuccessful in treating them. One physician asked if there was anything you could do, and you offered to try. We established IV vitamin C drip rooms and purchased intravenous vitamin C and other nutrients, and the staff implemented your AIDS protocols. Over the next 2 years, about 10 people with advanced AIDS reversed their HIV status and turned seronegative. All the infections disappeared, and they were HIV and AIDS free. I briefly met one of these patients recently, and she was healthy today. I remember when I met with the director and the Institute board members one evening to request that these successes be made more public. They decided to remain silent because it might jeopardize funding. This work was not based upon patentable drugs, and the advisory board said it would only draw negative attention because it was contrary to standard drug treatments. After the meeting ended, the director shrugged his shoulders and said it would not be the last time that someone accomplished something notable, and it would remain relatively unknown to the world. Shortly thereafter, you were awarded the honor of becoming an Institute Research Fellow and the youngest person to receive that honor. On another occasion, you were researching your energy healing over a 2-year period. One doctor told me to not communicate this with anyone else. You and several colleagues were also healers and were investigating the influence of prayer on mice with tumors and were able to reverse the cancer on 6 different occasions. We decided not to discuss it, although Dr. Stanley Krippner was aware of the work and supported it. I think the one study that got everyone's attention was actually authorized for release was your discovery that all plants contained the 8 essential amino acids, therefore animal protein consumption was unnecessary in one's diet. This meant that anyone could become a vegetarian or vegan without compromising their amino acid intake. I was also present when you presented your egg project in a packed high school auditorium. The Institute's director introduced you and was extremely proud of your accomplishments. A month later, you were appointed head of the Department of Anti-Aging Science and Medicine. I personally enjoyed the hundreds of conversations we had with many of the unique minds that you had invited to the Institute, including Dr. Linus Pauling and Dr. George Borgstrom. There were too many to remember. You managed to turn the Institute into a creative oasis of visionary minds dedicated to saving lives, and yet the world was almost ignorant of this vital environment. I'm sharing this with you now because I've had a number of multiple strokes, and my heart is giving out. However, I want to make sure that if it's my time to pass, you know the truth about how I and the Institute's director and other scientists felt about the level of integrity and scientific brilliance that you honored us with over those three decades. Best regards, Elena, Senior Scientist and Research Fellow. To know that someone that you work with for over 30 years and have known for over 45 years, and now she's at that point of passing, so I'm going to reach out to her today and let her know that I can hopefully help her. I understand she's in critical care. And if she gives me a chance and she hasn't given up and is ready to pass, then maybe I can help her come back. That's what I do. I help people all the time who are at death's door. But imagine that, and I just found out by reading this, that all my work that was contrary to what the establishment believed in, but was good and resulted in positive lives and positive results in lives being saved, it was intentionally prevented from being released to the public because it went against what they were doing. But that's the world we live in. So now we have this letter. So please go to prn.fm, read the letter for yourself, and look at all the people whose lives were saved. Look at the science that is there. Look at the reporters. In fact, I remember being invited by one of the people, Bill Tatum, to come up. I thought I was just going to go up and do a little lecture in Harlem. It turns out it was the Apollo Theater, and it turned out it was packed. And it was 99% African Americans there. And there were so many people outside that we had to continue for 3 days. And still not everybody got in after 3 days of packing the upstairs and downstairs and the hallways and the aisles and the stage. Because I had to go on tour, I couldn't stay longer than 3 days. And on the first day, most of the people got up at the beginning before I spoke. All were African American medical doctors using my protocol and getting equally good results with AIDS. No one would know that. The world would not know it because no American media covered it. And that's unfortunate. So the pharmaceutical industry, the people who make the toxic drugs, they control the media. So the truth and good results, we are not recognized. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Let's now go to a piece that I was going to discuss, and I think it's important because I'm very concerned about fascism. I'm very concerned about the corruption within the corporate media, and I'm very, very unhappy with what has happened to our body politic because these are not the people we should be voting for. We should be looking for proper populist people with integrity who are running as a third party. And by the way, up to 47% of all independents said they wanted to vote for a third party person. They just don't know of any. By all means, we should be paying attention to impeachment to allow the president or any rogue government agency or individual to disregard the rule of law whenever, wherever, and however it chooses and operate above the law is exactly how a nation of sheep gives rise to a government of wolves. To be clear, this is not about Donald Trump. I have nothing good to say about Donald Trump. Or at least it shouldn't be just about Trump. This condemnation of every government toady at every point along the political spectrum, right, left, and center, who has conspired to expand the federal government's powers at the expense of the citizenry. We shouldn't have a military budget that is $1.5 trillion above and below line, and creating countless wars, regime changes, and sponsoring dictators. 75% of all the dictators in the world, we're funding. Our taxpayers' dollars are funding. And yet we don't have the money for universal health care, they'll tell us. We don't have the money to go in and help people struggling with no jobs, low unemployment, and low infrastructure quality in at least 100 cities, major cities in the United States. We don't have money to feed 16 million food insecure children. We don't have money to find homes for 2.5 million homeless children. But we have unlimited amount of money to give to the war machine. For too long now, the American people have played politics with their principles and turned a blind eye to all manner of wrongdoing. When it was politically expedient, allowing Congress, the White House, and the judiciary to wreak havoc with their freedoms and act in violation of the rule of law. We, the people, are paying the price for it now. That's why I'm doing these specials. That's why I said if we don't stand up when there is a lack of ethics and morality and due process and habeas corpus, then what happens when we've been silent and now our silence has given them the approval to go ahead and do anything they want because there's no opposition? And where are the opposition places in the United States? How many demonstrations have you heard of against anything that's wrong? Where was the last march against poverty? Where was the last march against the overdrugging of our children? Where was the last march, and who led it, to help the homeless? There have been no marches. What does that tell us? So don't keep falling for the deep state's ploys. And yesterday, as I mentioned, was a perfect example. What the man actually said under oath is completely the opposite of what the media ran with. They created a false story because they wanted to honor the deep state's interest and not the truth. This entire impeachment process is a manufactured political circus, and it's meant to game the system and distract the public from the devious treachery of the American police state, which continues to lock down the nation and strip the citizenry of every last vestige of constitutional safeguards that have historically served as a bulwark against tyranny. Has President Trump overstepped his authority and abused his powers? You bet, without a doubt. Then again, well, so did President Obama, Bush, Clinton, Bush, Carter, Truman, Eisenhower, yes. Almost every president before them. Trump is not the first president to weaken the system of checks and balances and sidestep the rule of law and expand the power of the president. He's just the most recent. If we were being honest and consistent in holding government officials accountable, we'd have to impeach almost every president in the last at least 40 years who considered themselves above the law. Why didn't we impeach Reagan when he was doing his Iran-Contra deal? Why didn't we impeach Reagan and the other people in his administration for giving guns, arms, and training Somoza's old National Guard and hailing them as heroes, the Contras, when they were just common criminals and terrorists? Lots of people should be impeached for a lot of reasons, but they weren't for the right reasons. When the government and its agents no longer respect the rule of law, the Constitution, or believe in that it applies to them, then the very contract on which this relationship is based is invalid. This what you might call a stealth, creeping, silent, slow-motion coup d'etat. This abuse of power has been going on for so long that it has become the norm. The Constitution be damned. There are hundreds of thousands of government bureaucrats who are getting away with murder, in many cases literally, simply because the legislatures, courts, and citizenry can't be bothered to make them play by the rules of a constitution. Unless something changes in the way we deal with these ongoing, egregious abuses of power, the predators of the police state will continue to wreak havoc on our freedoms or our communities and our lives. It's the nature of the beast of power. Wasn't in the 19th century historian Lord Acton who concluded, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely? Well, give any one person or government agency too much power and allow him or her or it to believe that they are entitled, untouchable, and they will not be held accountable for their actions, and those powers will eventually be abused. Look at those people trying to regreen the environment but not doing anything to close down the polluters and change a person's lifestyle? Who then judges those actions? When did you see a commentary on television asking people, do you know the consequences of wanting more of these electronic devices and how governments are overturned because of it and people in the countries where those precious metals are mined are exploited so you can have your newest technology? Do you really need that? Think of what happens when every one of those new televisions and telephones and cell phones and cars are monitoring you, listening to your conversations in your car, recording you and when from your computer. That little tiny hole in the middle of the top above the screen, that is a television monitor. Did you know that? It's in the contract. They can record anything that you say or do and then share it. They're now sharing with Google your medical records. Do you want everyone anywhere to have access to your medical records? I should think not. Yet that's what happens when you choose a convenience over what it means that you're abrogating in responsibility to hold these people accountable. They're putting 53,000 satellites into space that we don't need for technology that is dangerous and unproven and is going to cause all kinds of havoc on our health. And when was there a government official that stood up and said, this is wrong? There hasn't been any. It's independent scientists and independent activists, and almost always after the fact and after someone's harm. That was true of DDT. It was Rachel Carson, a marine biologist, in 1965, wrote Silent Spring, and then the government didn't support her. They attacked her. Industry attacked her. She was right. They were wrong. PCBs. The activists were right. The government and the corporations were wrong. Asbestos, the same. Artificial sweeteners, the same. Dioxin, the same. Copper coil, the same. Hundreds of times the government has been wrong. The orthodox scientific community by consensus was wrong. Right now, 10 million American women are going to get synthetic hormone replacement therapy. That is wrong. It increases heart disease, stroke, breast cancer risk, dementia, and colorectal cancer. Yet they will not be told not to because they have their own internal group consensus. If enough doctors believe that a therapy is good, it's good, not because it's been proven good by independent science, but it's been proven good by consensus. So they're giving at least 33% of all antibiotics to people who have viral infections, and a viral infection is not impacted by bacteria, but your good gut bacteria are destroyed by the antibiotics. So they're wrong and not punished. They're rewarded for it. And when doctors told women to smoke because it was good for their health and ease their tension, they were wrong, but no one was held accountable. The government was wrong, and the public and the activists were right. So you see, it doesn't matter what the issue, the government's never there first and foremost to protect us. Right now, all of our laws are being weakened. The EPA is becoming just a mouthpiece for the polluters. And that's also true of the media. So where are you going to get truth? Where are you going to get facts? Who's going to stand up against these people when standing up against anyone in authority today, you are a target? And they can say anything about you, and the people will not know the difference. And once smeared, once slimed, once shamed, in your lifetime you will never be able to overcome it because you can't change everyone's perception of who you really are once they have taken it upon themselves to see you as a threat and to neutralize you. Just ask Chris Hedges, ask Abby Martin, ask all the other people who had the truth on their side and yet can't find a place in the media to get their message out as they once did because they have been considered the enemy or not to be trusted. Yet the talking heads on television that you do trust, those are the people who are misguiding us from the truth of our actions. And all this because people in power don't want to surrender their power, don't want to share their power, and don't want to use their power for the common good. They are only in it for themselves. And there is no cure for greed. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all very much for listening, and I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.
My love, there's only you in my life, the only thing that's right.